back again, Will Miles from Read and Reaction. And look here, what I got in the mail made my weekend right here, if you can see it. The latest 2025 preview. Of course, the Florida Gators. Will, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for putting out such an outstanding college football preview magazine.
Hey, man, we appreciate it. We appreciate you having us on. Obviously, your audience is not just Florida, but our magazine is. That's sort of the concept. But actually, our overall goal is to prove out in the Florida landscape that this is workable as a business model and then expand. So hopefully next year, we're talking about the Tennessee, the Alabama, and the Ohio State preview magazines with you as well.
Yeah, and I really wanted you to, you know, share what you can about, why... just in case anybody missed last year's interview, but why you guys make this magazine and more importantly, how much time and effort goes into this? Because I love listening to your podcast as well, but I know you guys literally had to take months off just to get this outstanding magazine out. But how much work goes into doing something like this?
Well, I mean, the funny part is like you storyboard everything maybe in like December and you start saying, okay, like what are our main stories going to be and all that sort of stuff. And part of the problem is you've got all the transfer portal stuff that goes on. So the roster doesn't necessarily look in May like you thought it was going to in December. There's always stories that pop up along the way. But the biggest thing is that we like to follow the stats. That's really the thing that I think sets Read and Reaction apart from other places is we really want to follow the stats and use those to try to tell the story. And so what'll happen is you'll start pulling a thread or you'll start watching film and you'll go, and you'll start looking at that. So I would say about half of what you'll read in the magazine was not storyboarded in December because we started pulling a thread on a particular stat and said, I'd like to follow that downstream. So look, it takes an awful lot of time to put together. Certainly, I think the big thing is that we wanted to really focus on telling a story this year. And so Nick, my business partner, had everything put together and we both sat down and we went, the flow just isn't quite right. And so we rearranged some stuff. We wrote a few new things and all sorts of stuff, really trying to make it flow and have it sort of go from recruiting and where does that stand to what happened in 2024 to what's going to happen in 2025. And so, yeah, it's a labor of love, certainly. And then the Florida specific part is just because I buy the Athlon magazine every year, the Lindy's magazine every year, Phil Steele's magazine every year. Great publications. But they got like a page and a half on Florida every year. And I'm a Florida alum. I'm a Florida fan. And so I want to read more about my team, right? Like, I don't necessarily need to know, I don't think the casual fan needs to know what's going on with the third string offensive tackle. But I mean, Harrison Bailey, the backup of Florida. What happens if DJ Lagway goes down? You're not going to find that in a preseason magazine. You're not going to find an analysis of that. And if you look at Lagway's stats last year, against zone coverages, he was much, much worse than against man-to-man coverage. So what can Billy Napier do to scheme around maybe some of Lagway's deficiencies? And then also, what can Lagway do to improve? So really being able to answer those sorts of questions as well. If you're a Florida fan and you buy this magazine, you'll be able to go into the season looking for some very specific things as to whether Napier is scheming up some advantages to Lagway and whether Lagway is significantly improved from last season.
Yeah, and before we jump into it, Will, I do want to compliment you guys. I think this is your best magazine yet. And again, the statistics, hardcore analysis there, I really appreciate it. But there's a ton of heart in this book, too. I think this is the perfect Father's Day gift for all the Gators out there. And there's a lot of, family stories in here. So but before we take a little bit deep dive into some of the content of the book, can you tell my readers, where can they get their Read and Reaction Preview magazine?
Yeah, you can get the magazine at readandreaction.com/MAG. That's readandreaction.com/mag. You can also look it up on Amazon. If you just type in 2025 Read and Reaction Preview Magazine, it should pop up there. That's the cool part is having it on Amazon. You get to see, you held it up there. You get to see something that, it got printed and shipped to you. So we're starting to become professional over here to get that out there in a way that's quick and gets it to people in time for Father's Day. So you still got about a week left, but if you're looking for something for your dad, and I will say, the interesting thing is that as we look at this magazine, especially, I think there's a lot of content that could fit in any SEC magazine realistically, like, because you have to frame Florida's season in relation to everyone else. And so there isn't anything specific about Tennessee's starting quarterback or Georgia's starting quarterback in terms of breakdowns, but in terms of where those teams were last year and that sort of stuff, there's a lot of stuff in there that I think, you know, fans of any team would find interesting. So like I said, the plan is to expand as we move forward in the years to come. And the goal will be to sort of use that sort of overarching statistical profile to then as a shadow for the specific team that we're going after.
Yeah. And I also love the fact that you can get a paper copy to hold in your hand or a digital, you know, I would imagine most younger audiences, they don't give a damn about the physical copy, but old guys like you and I, man, I love, like you said, I get the Athlon, Lindy's and all that. So I love having the physical copy and just add them to my collection. So there's a different array of options there. But speaking of analysis, and again, cover athlete, I would imagine this was the easiest damn decision you guys ever made. But DJ Lagway, number one quarterback in the SEC, according to Reader Reaction Preview Magazine. How can that be? How can that be? I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but I think it's 12 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. That's what I got to hear time and time again when I pump this guy up. How in the world do you got DJ Lagway as a number one quarterback in the SEC?
Yeah, it really comes down to one number specifically for me, and that's 10 yards per attempt. So the guy is ultra, ultra efficient when he goes downfield. And, you know, part of that is projection, right? I mean, you sit there and you say, okay, he's already got the deep ball down. And now you got to teach him the underneath stuff. But the other thing is he played on one leg last year. So, you know, I think for folks who don't follow Florida incredibly closely, like Florida fans were all mortified. We thought his season was over after a hamstring injury real early against Georgia. After you could sort of feel the Georgia fans go, like when he hit a long pass to Aiden Mizell there to start that game. And then he went down and, oh man, the Aiden Warner experiment did not go well after that. So, you know, Florida's set up to be able to weather a small storm if there is. But the big thing with Lagway is that you've just got a guy who's got the ability to run and didn't show it at all last year. But the big thing, and this is the thing that I think most people tend to overlook, is I'm a huge believer that sacks are a quarterback stat. And that when you've got a guy who like runs out of bounds instead of letting the ball fly and being successful when he lets the ball fly too, but you've got quarterbacks who will sort of turtle and they'll take a bunch of sacks and maybe the stat profile looks really good through the air, but they've cost themselves 4 or 5 drives by taking stats or by taking sacks. And then the drive is dead because it's 2nd and 17. And that doesn't happen with DJ Lagway. And so he was very much, you know, feast or famine last year. Like you were either having a big time drive or it was a 3 and out. But those big time drives put a ton of points on the board. And so that realistically is why I think he profiles as either the first or second best quarterback in the conference. And I think it's a battle between him and Manning. I know, you know, you'll mention Lenore Sellers probably, but I really think it's between him and Manning. So I have my own proprietary stat that I use in the magazine. It's called Yards Above Replacement. It looks at both passing efficiency and rushing efficiency. So it tries to suss out how efficient was a guy. Because I think, you know, you look at interceptions, like 3 or 4 of Lagway's interceptions were because either a guy ran the wrong route or because he got hit as he was throwing the ball. You can't necessarily always just go, oh, he threw 9 interceptions, he must be bad. I think the reality is from an efficiency standpoint, he was really, really good. And he was better than the guys who were coming back too. I mean, am I looking at John Mateer? Am I looking at Marcel Reed? Am I looking at Blake Shapen? Like Diego Pavia? Like those guys, good quarterbacks, but not great. Lagway had my yards above replacement, if you're at 1, you're like kind of Jake Fromm. If you're 2, you're Heisman level. And if you're 0, you're average. He was at 1.85 or 1.65 last year. So somewhere between very, very good and elite. And you look at a guy like Manning, he was at 2.5. So he might very limited time at Texas, a lot of mop up duty, but those are sort of the two that I'd profile there.
Any concern with just the fact that he didn't participate much in the spring that could at all stunt his development? Cause it was, you know, it's different if he was a rising senior and he's been through it all, but this is his first time as the guy in Gainesville. Could that negatively affect him at all this fall, do you think?
I mean, I think it could. I think the bigger question is what happens when he takes a hit on that shoulder, right? I mean, there's, you know, he wasn't throwing because of a shoulder injury, not because he was like suspended or anything. So it's something where you got to watch out for the injury. And like I mentioned earlier, Harrison Bailey might need to come in for a game or two and sort of just, you know, hopefully not the Texas game or not the Georgia game, but you know, if you get him in against a Kentucky or against a Mississippi State or something like that, he might have to be able to get the job done. But I think I have less concern because everything that Lagway needs to do to take steps forward next year has to do with quickly reading defenses. It has to do with understanding the film and what the defense is trying to do with him. There's a stat we actually cite that the Gator Nation Football podcast put out about Lagway's stats against drop eight coverage. So when the defense decides to only rush three, and he was absolutely putrid last year against drop eight coverage. And I guarantee you, he spent a lot of time with his coaches watching film on what do you do against drop eight coverage. I have some suggestions in the magazine too, but you know, they should be, he and the staff should be fully versed on how to address that. And those are the things that you can practice identifying on the sideline. So to me, it's a mental processing thing. It's an understanding. This is what they're giving me. And then it's a question of Florida trying to dictate to the defense because of Lagway's skills. You know, you can do a lot of stuff. The air raid was awesome years ago because it basically said, no matter what zone you play, we're going to run to open space with one of our four wide and go for it. Florida probably has the most skill at wide receiver that they've had in a really long time. They got a lot of young guys there, but they got the most skill they've had in a really long time. I do wonder, you know, Nick had a really good stat in the magazine where I think 99% of all of Florida's formations last year were 11 or 12 personnel. So they had a tight end in a lot, right? And I don't know that they're going to necessarily do that this year. I think they're going to spread it out a little bit, let Lagway go and see where it goes. I suspect that he might be a little bit rusty early, but the good news is unlike the last couple of years, Florida has a couple of cupcakes to start the year. And so you can kind of get him into the groove, get him ready, get him going. Then they got some road games there, and that's going to sort of be probably the key to whether they're able to make a playoff run is some of those early road games early on. And by then, I think Lagway will be fully integrated in the offense. Will have been practicing all fall. Will have had a couple of games under his belt. So as long as he's healthy, I think it'll be full go.
Yeah, and speaking of cupcakes, I literally did not know Long Island had a football team until I saw the schedule, but That's going to be a nail biter, isn't it?
It'll be nice. So Billy Napier has found a way to rip my heart out the last 2 years of the openers. And, you know, it's funny because I was there with my son, Max, for the Utah game that started off his tenure, where they get the walk-off interception from Amari Burney, a linebacker who really, you know, Florida fans had high hope for, but never really developed. And then you had Anthony Richardson running all over the field, and you're like, okay, like we're on our way. And then everything just sort of tanked. And then he comes out against Utah the next year, the first play of the game, big time touchdown throw by Utah's backup quarterback, who wasn't any good apparently at the end of the year. And just again, sort of ripped your heart out. And then last year against Cam Ward, Miami comes in, just absolutely trounces Florida's defense. It looked like business as usual. And so it's funny. There's so much optimism around the program. There's so much optimism when I look at the players. There's all this sort of stuff where you're just like, you know, if Billy Napier can harness it. But that's the question, right? I mean, that's the place where I have the most amount of doubt is I just sit there and I go, are we going to get ultra conservative when it comes down to it in the fourth quarter of one of these games? And they've got a Lamborghini in DJ Lagway and they decide to keep him in the garage. And that's the thing that maybe scares me more than anything for the entire year. So, yeah, I'm glad they're starting with the Sharks of LIU and then they got South Florida next. But like I mentioned, after that, you got at LSU, at Miami versus Texas and at A&M. So, you know, three big time road games. And if you look at like last year, Alabama lost all three of their road games. You look at the end of the year, Florida really righted the ship with LSU coming to Gainesville and Ole Miss coming to Gainesville. Look at Ole Miss, two of their three losses were on the road. I think there's a lot of parity in the SEC these days, mainly because, and this sort of goes back to the comment that you made about Lagway. And one of the things I wrote about Lagway is, a couple of years ago, the quarterbacks in the SEC, the best quarterbacks, were on the most talented teams. Alabama had the best quarterbacks. Georgia had the best quarterbacks. And now that's evened out a little bit. I mean, you got Jackson Dart last year at Ole Miss. That's not as talented a team as the Georgias and the Alabamas, but able to lift the boat there. I think if you look at Tennessee with Nico, a talented guy, didn't maybe deliver exactly what Tennessee fans wanted, but a talented guy. Now you got Florida with Lagway, you know, and that quarterback position can really raise the talent level. So we'll see. I'm scared to death Napier's going to rip my heart out again, but you know, if he does, the problem is Lagway loves him. So we got Florida fans have him for at least two more years, no matter what happens.
Yeah, why he was going to go for two and then didn't at Tennessee, I'll never know. But I'm thankful for him. I don't think he deserves ever to live that down. But so that's kind of where we're at with Billy Napier. He's in a unique position. I've said this offseason. He and obviously we'll keep the focus on the Gators, but he and Brent Venables, I think, are in really difficult spots because all off season we're hearing nothing but hype. Josh Pate, which I respect him greatly. I thought it was a little ridiculous. He had both Florida and Oklahoma, I believe, in his top 10. I think that's a little rich, but again, I think those teams will be much, much improved. But now we're setting this expectation for playoff, perhaps. And again, I think both those teams are capable. But if they go 6-6, or God forbid worse, I mean, it's heads will roll, won't they?
Well, I mean, look, Billy Napier's 500 in his career at Florida after an 8-5 season last year. And so you don't get that much time in Gainesville to turn things around. People have been patient because of DJ Lagway. And I joked a couple minutes ago, hey, you know, he's got 2 years because Lagway's got 2 years of eligibility. That's probably true. If Florida shows any semblance of a pulse this year, but yeah, look, Caleb Banks and Tyreek Sapp, the two big time guys on the defensive line who've come back for NIL deals, they're not going to stay another year. Right. And in fact, I'm not even sure they're eligible to stay another year, but they're not going to stay another year. And so this is the time. The Florida defense does not have a ton of depth. They have a fair amount of talent, and they've got some guys who've developed and then stayed. Like Sapp was a guy who was relatively highly rated in recruiting circles, but he wasn't like a can't miss prospect. Banks was a transfer from Louisville who came in, who was, you know, a developmental prospect that everybody saw the talent, but wasn't necessarily somebody said was a can't miss guy. Well, now they've got those guys and they've both turned out. And so they had another five-star who came in with DJ Lagway last year in LJ McCray. And he didn't really show a ton of flashes last year, but he's somebody who they need to step up. But if McCray steps up on defense, well, now all of a sudden you can start creating some havoc on the defensive line that Florida didn't see much of it until sort of the second half of the year last year. And if they can do that, well, then that sets up for sort of Lagway to have a little bit more of a learning curve. But I don't know if that's going to be there 2 years from now. So, yeah, I mean, look, if Florida goes 6-6, it's unacceptable, and I'm calling for Napier's head. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, the reality is that you get a generational quarterback once every 10 years, maybe once every 20. And so you get the generational quarterback, you got to take advantage of it. But look, I mean, LSU just had a generational quarterback a couple years ago in Jaden Daniels, and they go 10-3. So you need everything to sort of hit all at the same time. And this 2025 season is the timing for Florida. I think they're going to struggle if they're waiting for Lagway to carry everything in 2026. And so 6-6, nah, not acceptable. I think, you know, Venables in Oklahoma is under pressure for different reasons. His offense was obviously terrible. You got Mateer coming in there, and there are some expectations, but the expectations for Florida with Lagway have been building since Lagway committed. And, you know, most of these five-star guys, the five-star quarterbacks commit well before National Signing Day, and Lagway was the same way. So Florida was sort of like, in fact, Austin Simmons, who's going to be in the quarterback, you know, rotation, at least at Ole Miss, was somebody who had committed to Florida and then flipped and would have been there last year or 2 years ago, I think, if Florida needed him. And so, you know, they really haven't had anybody else come in the recruiting cycles because no one wants to play behind this guy. So it's been this guy or bust for like 2 years now for Napier. And we've just sort of been waiting. And last year, getting that taste of Lagway means everybody's sort of salivating at what the kid can be. And one of the points I make in the magazine is he was good for a quarterback last year, not just good for a true freshman. And so not only is he hyped, but he delivered on the hype and was the Gatorade National High School Player of the Year 2 years ago too. So a lot of things to be excited about. And if you told me who's going to make the playoff, the guy with DJ Lagway or the guy with John Mateer? I'd say Lagway, which means there's probably more pressure on Billy Napier to deliver because this is his opportunity.
Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of covered it, all the excitement on the offensive side of the ball. I think Jaden Ball could be one of the breakout stars of the entire conference. I think they got the best center in the conference. They got some, like you mentioned, some stud receivers coming in. But Florida's turnaround, really, in my opinion, I'm curious to know what you think, Will, about it. It really flipped when the defense turned a corner. What do you think about the Gators' defense under Ron Roberts assuming full-time defensive duties this fall?
Well, I think it's a heck of a lot better than the Gators' defense under Austin Armstrong, that's for sure. It's interesting. So I did not like the Armstrong hire when they brought him in. And I wrote about it at the time, and I said so. And the reason was is that he ran a defense very, very similar to Patrick Toney, who's the defensive coordinator in Billy Napier's first year. And Florida's defense got shredded. And the reason that they got shredded is they did not have the talent to be able to play the kind of aggressive defense that those guys were asking them to play. And so if you look, and I have an entire section in the magazine called The Ron Roberts Resurrection, there was a distinct change in the philosophy of the Florida defense between the week before they played Mississippi State, then had a bye week and came out of that bye week. The next after that bye week came out, and there was a complete change in philosophy for the Florida defense. And it was something that I had really looked at coming into 2024 because Ron Roberts was very similar to Austin Armstrong and Patrick Toney before he went to Baylor. And then his defenses at Baylor played a much more conservative bend but don't break style. And then after week four, that's what happened to Florida last year. And what it does is it reduces the pressure on your linebackers. And Florida hasn't had elite linebackers in a really long time. And if you have linebackers who can cover up deficiencies or linebackers who are really good at rushing the passer, you can get away with doing those simulated pressures and having defensive linemen drop and all that sort of stuff. But if your linebackers aren't getting home and you've got defensive linemen on tight ends and sometimes wide receivers, you're going to get torched. And that's what happened over and over and over again. And you wound up in situations where the safeties didn't know what to do because they were kind of covering for the defensive ends. So what you saw last year with Florida's defense is the safety play got way better because they got much simpler, and the linebacker play got better because they got much simpler, and they stopped having breakdowns. Now, they still weren't elite unless Banks and Sapp were getting a boatload of pressure on the quarterback. So in a couple of those games towards the end of the year, the defense looked really, really, really good because they were able to get pressure. And if you played against a quarterback who was willing to allow you to pressure him, so this is why I think Florida's defense did well against Tennessee last year, because I think Nico was pretty susceptible to getting pressured and allowing that to rattle him if in fact that happened. And Florida was able to get a little bit of pressure, and it made things difficult on him. But you get up against like a really experienced quarterback, and that doesn't necessarily cause problems. So Ewers just completely blew the doors off of him. Because that's sort of what this defense is. I think this defense, at least as of last year, if they played an elite offensive team with a quarterback who really knew what he was doing, he could just pick them apart like crazy, which is one thing I would say about Jackson Dart. Probably NFL teams need to be a little bit wary about. But there was a distinct change. So I'm pleased that Ron Roberts is the defensive coordinator versus Austin Armstrong. But again, I think it still comes back to, is Florida going to be able to get havoc, which is why I think LJ McCray is probably the biggest X factor for Florida's defense. Like getting a five-star guy to live up to the five-star hype as a true freshman. You know, if he puts up 8, 9, 10 sacks, like some of the guys Florida's had before coming off the edge, or they just haven't had a five-star athlete on the defensive line in a very long time. And if you can put some fear into the quarterback, or, and this is maybe the bigger thing, is if you can get double teams on the outside that allow Sapp and Banks to operate against single teams, oh boy, like that could really mean havoc for the offensive side of the ball. So I'm excited to see where it goes. Again, still a little bit hesitant because Florida's defense has been bad for, you know, 5, 6 years now. They haven't had good linebacker play since David Reese was playing middle linebacker. And I mean, Reese was a really solid college player, but didn't play in the NFL. So now they got some guys who profile as NFL guys at that position. So I'm interested to see what Roberts is able to scheme up now that he's got some guys with a full year of experience there.
Mm-hmm. And shout out to your partner, Nick Knudsen. I mean, he does a great job diving into a lot of these roster evaluations. I love the maps, too. Are pretty cool to see where Florida's getting their recruits, where they're getting their transfers. And one thing that the reason I bring it up, I think Billy Napier's strength is identifying talent, recruiting, and developing it to Gainesville. And Nick, he kind of ungemmed a mine there with Florida kind of keeping the best prospects in state, something, and keeping them more importantly away from Georgia and Alabama. Can you highlight that for us?
Yeah. So, I mean, the top 20 prospects in Florida, Nick looked at, Florida had five of them in 2025 and had five of them in the previous 3 years. So 2022, 2023, and 2024. Georgia had six in 2023, four in 2022. Alabama had five in 2022. But if you look at 2025, Georgia, Miami, and Alabama only had four total top 20 prospects in the state of Florida, whereas Florida has five. So there's been a shift in the state in terms of really focusing on that specific spot. And I think in many ways, like Billy Napier's recruiting certainly has come under my microscope a few times, because it's not the Alabama, we're going to dominate everything, or the Georgia, we're going to dominate everything. But one of the other things Nick wrote about in the magazine was the amount of retained talent that Florida has. So I have an article that I wrote about what you can expect from the transfer portal, like what kind of production you should expect. And really, you know, should you expect elite guys coming out of there? Or is it just sort of, are you papering over holes, you know, so that you don't have like some massive area of deficiency? And so retaining your guys becomes really, really important. And so how much of your roster is high school recruits? How much of your roster is transfers? I think that's going to matter more and more as we go forward. Now, look, limited data sets, and we admit that in the magazine, and certainly admit that all the time, that there's limited data sets to understand sort of the new transfer portal maybe over the last couple of years versus the transfer portal of, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. You know, when Dan Mullen had Van Jefferson coming from Ole Miss, that was like a major deal to have one SEC guy going to another SEC school. Now they're flipping every year, right? So a very different world out there. But I think, you know, the hope for the Florida program, the hope for Billy Napier obviously lies with Lagway first, but the secondary part of it is that he's had so much continuity on the roster. There's been very little turnover between last year's roster and this year's roster. They lost Jack Pyburn, who's a backup defensive end, to A&M. But they're bringing back four offensive linemen. You mentioned Baugh at the running back position. Jacoby Jackson's coming back at the running back position as well. They brought in J. Michael Sturdivant at wide receiver, somebody who was at UCLA and Cal. But other than that, you've got Aiden Mizell, you've got Trey Wilson coming back, and then you've got a couple of five-star recruits who are coming in. And so there's a lot of continuity on the team. The two starting safeties have played a ton of safety the last couple of years. The linebackers now, Miles Graham and Pup Howard, are guys who now have at least a full year. So these are all guys who Florida fans actually know, which is interesting to root for, right? Because most programs now are sitting there going, oh, who's our quarterback this week and who's coming in this month? And, you know, that sort of stuff. I think Florida fans get a little bit annoyed that there's not as much activity in the transfer portal coming in. But there also hasn't been a lot of activity, at least in the last year, year and a half, in the transfer portal going out. And so I think that's sort of maybe the hallmark for Billy Napier is if you keep the guys in Florida at Florida and then you keep them on your roster for 3 or 4 years, you know, I suspect that over time we're going to find some of these guys who come in and transfer after a year are less effective than guys who come in and stick it out. I think iron sharpens iron. That's sort of the way it works, right? And so if you come in and pay your dues and sit behind somebody for a couple of years and then start, you're probably, one, more confident in your ability, and two, ready to go when you get out there on the field. And I think we're going to see a little bit of that. I think that'll start to show up in the numbers in a couple of years as we start to look back at, you know, who was successful when they were transferring around and who sort of just sort of was an average player for what their recruiting ranking was.
Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to close on this, Will, because you got there's a lot of positives, obviously, here. I know you're putting together a Florida magazine here, but this is the first time in my – correct me if I'm wrong – in the history of the Reader Reaction that you have projected the Gators to make the college football playoff. How confident are you in that selection?
Not very. I think it's one of those where if you look at Florida's schedule, and I think that's really sort of where this comes down to. 2 years ago, when Florida's schedule came out, when they brought Texas and Oklahoma into the SEC, I think we all looked at it and said, well, this is the end of the Billy Napier era. Like, there just isn't a possibility that he's going to make his way through there. And even halfway through last year, I think we all felt that way too. But all of a sudden, he runs off four straight wins in the season last year, and you've got momentum and that elite quarterback. But then look at the quarterbacks for the teams that they're playing. Garrett Nussmeier, everybody loves him. I don't. I don't think Nussmeier's very good. My own stat, yards above replacement, had him as below average last year. Carson Beck at Miami, he was below average at Georgia last year before the injury. He was good 2 years ago, but he was sort of like average good. He wasn't Cam Ward. So how many of those games does Miami lose last year that Ward was able to sort of pull out of a hat? And even then, that team wasn't good enough to make a playoff run. And then you got Texas. They've got Arch Manning. I think Manning's going to be good, but still they're breaking in a new quarterback. Texas A&M with Marcel Reed, he was sort of in that above average category. You got Georgia with Gunnar Stockton. You got Mississippi State with Blake Shapen. You've got Kentucky with Zach Calzada, who last appeared in a SEC game when he was playing for Texas A&M. You got Ole Miss. We already mentioned Austin Simmons a little bit. Maybe he's the quarterback there. You got Tennessee with Joey Aguiar coming in for Nico. Again, he was sort of right around the average mark last year. And then you got FSU quarterback transferring from Boston College, Tommy Castellanos. So I look at that and I go, Florida has a quarterback advantage in most, if not all, of those games. And so you should win games when you have a significant quarterback advantage. And so injury to Lagway, malfeasance by Napier, just maybe there's a guy who pops up who's better than I think he's going to be coming into the year. Those things could all happen. But I do think, and I think, one, the fact that they're sort of reseeding the college football playoff is going to make a difference. I think they will be able to avoid some SEC versus SEC matchups that way, which will probably make them a little bit more likely to bring SEC teams in. The other part is I'm pretty sure that the SEC is threatening the other members of the college football committee about the change that's going to be coming if the SEC doesn't get some more sway. So the three teams left out last year were not happy about it. But I think 9-3 with an elite quarterback probably will get you in. And so that's what I'm projecting for Florida. I think, you know, we do something every year where Nick and I do, where we do win, loss, or toss. We're picking wins, we're picking losses, and then we're picking toss-ups. Last year, I would say there was like one or two wins on the schedule, probably three losses, and then everything else was toss-ups. There's a lot less toss-ups this year, I think. And so, I got them going there, but I don't have them going 11-1, right? And so it's – if they go 8-4, they will not be outside the bounds of what I'm thinking. And obviously you miss the playoffs 8-4. If they go 9-3, I think with this schedule, especially if they're sort of close losses, I think they'll be able to sneak their way in. And if they go 10-2, I think they're in no problem at all. But I don't think they're ready to compete for the SEC championship yet, which is one of the goofy parts about this playoff, is you're not ready to win your conference, but you're ready to compete for a playoff or ready to compete for a national championship. But you know, I just look at it and I go, I see a quarterback who has – so I've spent years looking at high school stats for quarterbacks and how they project. And Lagway has some of the best high school stats you're ever going to see. And the reason I look at the high school stats is I think it indicates decision-making, good or bad. And so one of the reasons I was down on Nico coming into Tennessee is his completion percentage was really low in high school for a guy who profiled as like the number one overall quarterback recruit. And so you looked at – what that tells me is rockstar arm may struggle with decision making, especially early on. And I think Tennessee fans would tell you that might be what you got with Nico. Now, I mean, so if you show me a guy's high school profile, I can about 80% accuracy, I can tell you what he's going to be in college. And Lagway's high school profile is probably the only better high school profile I've seen is Joe Burrow. And so that's what I'm expecting to see from Florida this year. So I think they're going to get really, really, really good quarterback play. And that's why I think they're going to make a playoff run.
And then I almost fell out of my chair. Well, when I also you put UNLV. Do you know who their head coach is? Debut season there. How the hell is Dan Mullen going to make the playoff?
I am aware of who the head coach is, though we don't always speak his name around these parts. Not real happy. The good news is that when you're UNLV, you don't have to recruit.
Okay.
So he'll be okay. He is bringing in a lot of guys that he had at Florida. There's like fifth year seniors and stuff that he's bringing in that he either had committed to Florida or had playing at Florida at some point along the way. Yeah, you know, it's funny when you start looking at the way the playoff actually sets up, it's very difficult to figure out who do you think is going to be in there. And I think when we actually put this together, we were still looking at the every conference, like the conferences get the automatic bids. They announced that like 2 days after we went to press, of course. But hey, I got Belichick and his girlfriend making it too. So, you know, I would say we had a little bit of fun, or I had a little bit of fun with the non-SEC, non-Big Ten selections, if for no other reason because none of them are going to win,
right?
And it's going to be a Big Ten or an SEC team that wins everything this year anyway,
right? And to your point, I mean, I've said it many times, I believe it, I think Hugh Freeze, his path to the of course they've changed it a little bit, but his path to reaching the playoff was significantly higher at Liberty than I think it'll ever be at Auburn. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I mean, I think it really depends. Freeze is going to need a quarterback, same as Napier did. I don't think you're going to out-recruit Alabama even with Saban gone. And so can you come up and snipe Alabama every once in a while? Sure. And, I mean, even if you think about the Malzahn era, he was able to come up and snipe Alabama every once in a while. But it wasn't a consistent thing. And I think Auburn fans get frustrated that it's not a consistent thing. But there are paths to being able to get there now that just weren't there before. So, I mean, I guess what I would say is that his path at Liberty might have been clearer to the playoff, but I would say that Auburn's likelihood of a playoff or likelihood of a championship goes up with the playoff format, right? That I think having to go through Alabama all the time limited their ability to get there. And so, you know, they haven't gotten there very often. But now if you're the third best team in the West, you still have a shot to make it. And so, especially because it sounds like they're going to expand to 16, but eventually we'll have a field of 64. So, you know, it's like at that point, it'll be like Mike White, Florida's basketball coach, where, well, he made the field of 64. We can't get rid of him. Then they get rid of him 3 years later. They're winning a national championship. So I mean, everybody who said they needed to get rid of him's, you know, crowing a little bit about that one. But I mean, look, I think I've been surprised at how much Freeze has struggled. I thought Freeze was really going to bring some, some fireworks on the offensive side of the ball that were going to enable him to get away with maybe a little bit less depth on the defensive side of the ball. And that just hasn't happened. And so, you know, this is your shot, right? The guy after the guy is usually when a team like Alabama takes a dip. And certainly Alabama took a dip last year under DeBoer, and we will see what happens over the next couple of years. But this is probably your opportunity to gain momentum. And if Freeze wastes it, they are not going to be forgiving of him at any point in this year if he's not able to do it. You know, we talked about Oklahoma and Florida in hot seats, but that Auburn seat ain't gonna be real cool if Freeze is struggling again.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, well, Will, I appreciate you coming on here, previewing the magazine and everything. I mean, some stuff we couldn't even hit on. Like, I love the fact that there's play analysis and breakdowns. You scan a QR code with your phone and you can watch the play as Will talks about it. But I will put in the pin comment under this YouTube video a link to buy the Read and Reaction Preview Magazine. Can you tell people that are just perhaps listening back on audio one more time, where can they get their Read and Reaction Magazine?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Michael. I really appreciate it. So you can get the magazine at readandreaction.com/mag. That's readandreaction.com/MAG. And, you know, like you mentioned, that was probably my favorite part, was the you do the film breakdowns and then you put the YouTube clips up so you can watch the clip while you're looking at the breakdown. And we have an entire section on it's called the insert, our play calling corner. And I love that. So that is a labor of love. I found clips from an Army game where they were using a concept that's really cool that you can also find in the Los Angeles Rams playbook. And so that's one of the things that I'm hoping that Napier brings to the table this year for Florida, because football is nothing if you're not stealing what everybody's doing to combat some of the coverages that everybody's bringing to the table. So again, appreciate you having me on. It's been awesome. And, you know, if folks want to support us, you can get the magazine. And certainly, you know, in the comments, if you'd like one for your own home team, let me know who should be next, because that's where the expansion is going to be going.
Oh, Cousin Shane, he's already he'll let you know. Tennessee, make the next magazine Tennessee for sure. He'll buy it. But, yeah, thanks again, Will. And looking forward to the season, what should be the best season yet under old Billy Napier. Of course, I said that all last year, and actually it turned out to be right, but after the first couple weeks, I looked like a damn fool.
Well, I mean, I had him fired after the game against A&M, so, you know, he was able to rise from the dead. We're going to start calling him the Undertaker or something. Like, he was in the casket. Like, it was ready to lower him down and managed to rise from the ashes. And, I mean, to overcome the injury, the lagway, everybody thought the season was over. And to be where they are now, where we're sitting here talking about a playoff run in June, just shows you how quickly things can turn in the world of college football, I'll tell you that much. And, yeah, you know, look, last year we were excited about the magazine, but there was no hope Florida was making a playoff run. And this year, there's actual hope. And that's all you want from a coach and a program, is that you've got hope. And we all know that 75, 80, 90% of the time, if you're not an Alabama fan, the hope is kind of useless by the time the end of the year comes. But, God, just some meaningful games in November and December would be awesome this year. So hopefully Napier can deliver.